Hello and welcome to the Liverpool Life weekly podcast. I'm Kate Hewson and I'm going to be bringing you all the top stories this week, as well as a sports roundup and what's on in the city. Coming up, the tax credit cuts debate went to Parliament this week.
I think the government has got to change course on this. I think that there's too many people losing too much money.
The universities in Liverpool prepare to redevelop Old City Centre building.
An innovation hub is such an important thing and it's so well connected there for all the universities.
And we visit the Liverpool Radical Film Festival.
It provides a platform for films that you wouldn't see in Liverpool otherwise.
Firstly, one of the most dramatic political events for years took place this week. The unelected House of Lords trashed the government's plans to bring in cuts in tax credits next spring, a move which has already been approved by MPs. The Prime Minister says this is a constitutional crisis, but thousands of families in Liverpool and across the country are breathing a sigh of relief. Our Liverpool Life reporter, Laura Gilchrist, has the latest.
Hi, Kate. So, as some of you may have heard, the debate regarding the tax credit cuts resumed earlier this week with the hopes to come to a decision on whether to scrap tax credits in a bid for the government to save money. The debate has been going on for quite some time now, ever since Chancellor George Osborne decided it would be a good way to save money. So here's a bit of background information about the tax credits. Tax credits are cash payments provided by the government which are used to top up the incomes of poorly paid families in Britain. They were originally created to give an incentive for these families to work harder and to try and abolish child poverty. However, they are costing the government currently around £30 billion a year, which in relation is the same amount of the entire defence budget. These credits are claimed by around 3.3 million families that include a person in work, with a significant amount of these people depending on the extra top-up to pay their bills. According to the House Commons Library, these cuts will lead to families losing approximately £1,200 to £1,300 a year. As a result of the Parliament debate that took place on Monday the 26th, the plan to get rid of these tax credits has been delayed. I spoke to Liverpool University politics professor John Tong to find out his view on why this debate is so significant to our society.
Well, it's significant because it will harm so many working people. If you cut tax credits, you're talking about millions of people who are in work suffering financially up to £1,200 per year, which is obviously a big hit because we're talking about those at the lower end of the wage scale who receive tax credits in the first place. So if you remove annual income of £1,200 from them, then clearly they are suffering. It also goes very much against the thrust of government policy, which is to make people in work always better off than those out of work. You know, the government's line has been make work pay, and they've highlighted the growth in jobs in recent years. So it's an embarrassment for the government, and that's but the sheer scale of the cut has meant that, you know, there's been disquiet not just in the House of Lords, which of course voted to make the government have a rethink the other night, but also there's disquiet with it amongst some Conservative MPs over the extent of the financial hit that people are taking. I think the government has got to change course on this. I think that there's too many people losing too much money, and it's an embarrassment because we're talking about people who are hardworking, who work for low incomes, who simply have had their money topped up because employers only pay them low wages. They've had their money topped up by the government. Now, the government naively claimed that employers, rather than the government, would top up wages, that employers would pay more. But there was no evidence when the government introduced these cuts that employers were going to pay people more. The fact is, you know, you've got, in many ways, a low-wage economy. People need to be able to live, and tax credits were a way in which that people on low wages could live. So I think that it's an embarrassment. I think that George Osborne's got to make changes. I think he will make changes next month. There's a government autumn statement on the 25th of November. I think some changes will be announced then. There'll be a softening of the scheme. And I think that will probably do the trick for the government to get it through the House of Commons, because at the moment the government has already been defeated in the Lords, but they face a Commons defeat on this issue, given the amount of disquiet on the Conservative backbenches. I mean, the government is trying to save money, and that's one of the big arguments that's been put forward by the government. This would save the government £4.5 billion. I think they're going to have to write off some of those savings, unfortunately, because and make cuts in other areas, because I don't think people are going to wear this. It's simply too big a hit in one go. What the government will point out, look, we've raised personal tax allowances, and we're raising the living wage so that people will be paid more, and so people are not as badly off as is being portrayed. And the government does have a point on that. But you simply cannot slash people's income. If you're earning, let's say, you've got to combine, if you've got a total income of, let's say, £18,000 a year from a combination of your wage and government tax cuts, if you lose £1,200 of that, it's a big hit. So the government's going to soften it. The government's going to have to come up and restore some of the tax credits that they were cutting back, or introduce it on a much more phased basis so that people will only lose over several years rather than simply lose £1,200 straight away. And I think that really is the way forward. So the government's going to have to soften its approach.
That was politics professor John Tong at Liverpool University. The tax credit cuts debate is to carry on later in November. We're interested to hear what you have to say about this scheme to cut tax credits, so get in touch and tweet us at JMU Journalism with the hashtag #TaxCreditCuts. Back to you, Kate.
Thanks, Laura. That was Laura Gilchrist talking about the tax credit cuts. And yes, don't forget to tweet us.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
The University of Liverpool and John Moores University want to create a business and innovation hub to keep graduates in the city. The redevelopment will invest £8 million into the Wellington Rooms, which was formerly the Liverpool Irish Centre. The centre closed in 1997 and since then numerous plans to redevelop the building have failed. In 2005 there was a proposal to turn the Wellington Rooms into a hotel, but this was one of the many plans which fell through. To redevelop, the project will take about 3 years and costs between £6 and £8 million. Our Liverpool Life reporter Alex Gordon visited the former Irish Centre earlier today.
I'm currently stood outside the former Irish Centre on Mount Pleasant, which has been closed now since around 1997. This venue was used for thousands of people who would meet here throughout the week for concerts, drama and music when it was the Irish Centre. I mean, from what I can see, it's just a complete derelict space. It's been abandoned, there's overgrown weeds, glass bottles, litter, boarded up windows. It's a real shame, but the plans to redevelop it into a business and innovation hub for graduates, it seems like a really great space to do so. And there's also possibilities that they could include a restaurant and bar here as well, which I think it's an absolute great venue to do so.
Thanks, Alex. That was our Liverpool Life reporter Alex Gordon outside the Wellington Rooms earlier today. She also spoke to Liverpool Liberal Democrat councillor Richard Kemp, who said graduates are important to the city.
But an innovation hub is such an important thing, and it's so well connected there for all the universities linking up the past with the future that I think it's bound to take off from that location.
That was Richard Kemp talking to Alex Gordon. Now this week, your favourite meats such as bacon, sausages and salami were placed in the same cancer-causing category as cigarettes, arsenic and asbestos. The World Cancer Research Fund has warned for several years there is strong evidence that consuming a lot of red meat can cause bowel cancer. However, this week it seems that it has been proved. I'm speaking to Liverpool Life reporter Laura Gilchrist on the topic. So Laura, what does this all mean?
Well, it doesn't mean that you can't tuck into a bacon sandwich ever again, but just to be careful not to eat too much of it. Meats such as sausages, bacon and salami have been given a Group 1 classification by Cancer Research UK, meaning that they are the meats most likely to be a cause of cancer. Meat such as pork, beef and lamb has been given a Group 2 classification.
So how much red meat can we eat?
The World Cancer Research Fund has advised that you eat no more than 500 grams a week of cooked red meat. Nowhere does it say that you should give it up altogether. However, statistics show the average person in the UK eats around 70 grams of red meat a day, so maybe just cut down your daily intake. People should, however, try and steer away from the processed meats, such as ham, as much as they can.
Thanks, Laura.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
Following the tragic death of John Muir student Liam Fletcher, this week Liverpool Life has looked into the stigma surrounding mental health, especially with young men. Gabby Britton, Liverpool Life reporter, has more.
one in four people experience some kind of mental health problem during the year. Mental health problems are as common an issue for students as the general population. According to Young Minds, a mental health charity dedicated to young people, one in four people, that's 26% of young people, will suffer from suicidal thoughts. Here in Liverpool, people are talking about mental health. Following the tragic death of Liam Fletcher, a 21-year-old John Moore student who took his own life earlier this month, a campaign has been launched to create awareness for mental health issues. A tribute walk will be held in Liverpool on the 1st of November. I spoke to the organiser and creator of the campaign, Raise Awareness for Depression and Mental Illness, Stephen Flanagan, who was a close friend to Liam Fletcher. He spoke of his friend.
He had half a goal, he's always smiling. He was always one of them lads, if you had a problem, you wouldn't have to think twice to go and ask him. He'd always be there and he'd give you the right advice. And he's just a generally outgoing person. Everyone enjoyed being in his company and being with him all the time, basically, so he's a nice lad.
The campaign has already gained momentum and has already over 1,400 members. I asked Stephen if he thought enough was being done to combat mental illness among young people in the UK.
No, not enough's being done, because as what I've heard from feedback from people since I've started this group, a lot of them have come to me and said that my group has benefited them more than going to their own doctors. So I think that it needs to be raised more, and that's why I'm stepping up.
We talked to the streets of Liverpool to see what people thought about the support given to those suffering.
I don't think enough has been done about it, because I wouldn't know where to go. If I had any problems, or my friends, I wouldn't know where to advise them. So I think they should promote it more.
The tribute walk for Liam and others like him will start this Sunday at St Luke's Church at 6:30 p.m. All members of the public are welcome to pay respects. We will have more on the story.
Thanks, Gabby. Visit jmu-journalism.org.uk for more on the story and the memorial walk. The Liverpool Radical Film Festival took place last week at the Pagoda Arts Centre on Henry Street, and also at a second venue on Duke Street. Its aim is to try and bring radical films to the new audiences. Films screened at the four-day event looked to challenge social, political and cultural perspectives. Discussions were also scheduled throughout the festival to talk about topics and issues featured in the films. On Saturday, there was a live performance from the largest youth orchestra in Europe, accompanied by historical footage of the Chinese community of Liverpool. Will McLeod, a volunteer at the event, says the event aims to bring diverse films to new audiences.
The event's run completely by volunteers, and we're all here, I guess, with our own motives to an extent. We've got a postgraduate student who is interested in finding different ways to put screenings on. For me, I suppose the two main aims of the festival: one, all our events are completely free, we don't have any sort of like corporate sponsorship. Obviously it's not very radical to have sort of like that kind of backing, so it's about, first of all, providing a safe space, a sort of can come together and feel like they have an equal stake in the event, in the screening, and you know what happens. And I guess the other thing is it provides a platform for films that you wouldn't see in Liverpool otherwise.
That was Will McLeod talking about the Liverpool Radical Film Festival. A new book outlining the history of Northern Ireland's troubles has been released by one of LGMU's own. Writing on the Wall, A Visual History of Northern Ireland's Troubles, is a chronological history of Northern Ireland as told through wall murals and images, explaining the conflicts and struggles of its people across religious and political divides. Liverpool Life reporter Adam Lawrence spoke to the author Stuart Borthwick about his new book.
In 2008, a friend of mine telephoned me and said that a friend of his was a mural painter in Belfast, but he was involved in a cross-community project in Belfast that involved both Republican painters and a loyalist muralist, and they were looking for a wall to paint in Liverpool. They'd been approached by an organisation that was calling itself the Liverpool Mural Project, and they wanted to bring them over to Liverpool to both strengthen those connections between the Republican muralists and the loyalist muralist, but also to explore the connections between Liverpool and Ireland. As part of that, I met a man called Bill Ralston, who is emeritus professor at the Transitional Justice Institute at Ulster University and an expert on murals. And he was very inspirational for me and his academic research and his popular research. And I just became fascinated with the murals. Obviously, I was invited back to Belfast. After that was painted, I was shown around East Belfast by Mark Irvine, who is a loyalist painter. And I was shown around West Belfast by Republican painters. And I gradually find myself travelling over to Belfast and then outside of Belfast to other towns to photograph murals. And gradually through that process of photographing murals over 7 years, it became apparent that perhaps I had a book in me.
Did you find it, see, with you coming from here, you have your own like view of the Troubles prior to going there. Was it a much different view on it once you got there, once you've seen the areas and seen the murals and talked to people? Did you find different? Was it the same sort of view you had on it prior to going?
I mean, that's interesting. I don't think my views changed enormously about the conflict. But what did surprise me was the warmth of the welcome that I received everywhere I went, in both Republican and Loyalist areas. People would come up to me as I was photographing murals and say, oh, there's another one around the corner. Or, you know, they'd smile and, you know, nod as I walked past them. And that was really nice. So actually that kind of outsider's perspective, which I was concerned about, in some respects, I think actually helped me. I can walk up the Falls and I'm an Englishman. I can walk up the Shankill and I'm an Englishman.
Mm.
No one batted an eyelid. No one had a problem with me being in any areas. I learnt a lot and deepened my knowledge, but it didn't hugely change my worldview.
I think with a lot of people back home, it's the way we were brought up. A lot of families, like younger people, are kind of driven and trying to stay away from those areas. So from my point of view, I wouldn't have seen most of these loyalist murals, but in some aspect of the book, to me, it seems like it's a bridge between people, where as I could look at that now, you know, I could see pieces of art that are amazing, which I would never have seen before. I just think, see, before you started to put this together, obviously you were just going over and taking photos and you realised that it was could be a book. Did you have any aims of what it could achieve, not just as a piece of work, but like socially, you know, could you think of see it as bridging any gaps between people who are obviously still stuck in those times?
I had a number of aims and a number of thoughts. One clear aim right from the start was to try and represent the beauty of certain murals. There are some murals that I photographed that I think are absolutely stunning pieces of work. The photograph on the front cover, for example, at Queen Maka in Armagh, I just think it's an absolutely stunning piece of art, and I wanted to capture it, represent it, and show it to a wider audience as such. So I also wanted to accompany my photographs with text, so I have written 33,000 words that accompany the photographs. It is a history of the Troubles with the, I suppose, the dramatis personae provided by the murals themselves, and then I expand upon the events as they're discussed, and they're presented in chronological order, so starting with prehistory almost, starting with the figure of Cuchulainn, and then ending in 2015 with an incomplete peace process and following the history through that. I wanted something that tourists could take away and could deepen their knowledge. As you probably know, many of the murals in the Bogside or many of the murals in Belfast are tourist attractions, and they do attract significant numbers of people to view them. I wanted those people to be able to take something away that they could show their friends and say, look, this is the beautiful work of the murals of Belfast, but also something that they could read as well and perhaps deepen their knowledge. So I hope I've done that. I hope I've pitched that. Getting that tone right, getting that pitch right, and getting that balance right was very, very hard.
That was Adam Lawrence speaking to Stuart Borthwick. The book is available from a number of outlets around Liverpool, including News From Nowhere on Bull Street. Well worth a look.
a major shortage of lorry drivers could pose a threat to the British economy and put Christmas deliveries at risk, the Road Haulage Association has warned this week. Van delivery drivers are gearing up for what is anticipated to be a record volume of parcels to distribute as shoppers increase online spending in the run-up to Christmas. The industry is tens of thousands of drivers short of the number that is needed, according to the organisation, which represents more than 8,000 haulage companies. We spoke with Kate Gibbs from Road Haulage Association about the matter.
Desperately important. You know, everything we wear, everything we buy, everything in our homes is spent part of its time on the back of a truck. Now, if we want to maintain the lifestyle standards that we've been lucky enough to now take for granted, then the lack of drivers is really going to have an effect on that. Right now, we're between 45 and 50,000 drivers short. We're seeing more and more retiring because the average age is about 55. So they're dropping off at one end and they're not coming in at the other end because that's purely down to funding. You can actually start your training when you're 18 years old, but, you know, that costs about £3,000. I don't know of any 18-year-olds that have got £3,000 disposable income, and those that are lucky enough to have that probably aren't going to consider spending it all in one go on training for a new job. The haulage industry is the lifeblood of the UK economy. Now, without drivers, that blood is going to quite simply stop flowing. That cannot be allowed to happen.
That was Kate Gibbs from Road Haulage Association. A project spearheaded by Liverpool MP Frank Feed to feed the children during the school holidays begun this week in a push to wipe out hunger in his constituency. Adam Lawrence has more on the story.
The Birkenhead representative leads the Feeding Birkenhead campaign set up last Christmas with food banks, churches and volunteer groups after a national parliamentary inquiry into hunger last year. During the summer holidays this year, 2,058 children were fed by 8 venues in Birkenhead, and the project aims to achieve the same sort of success during this midterm. These sessions have proven of massive importance within the community, and they hope this previous success will continue. I spoke to Lynn Collins, CEO of Tranmere Community Project.
It started, I think, I mean, I've only worked here since May, but I think the first Fun and Food session started in the May half term. For the WIT half term, and they went very well, and they run not just by us but by organisations across Birkenhead. And then in the summer, we did 5 weeks of activities, meeting 3 times a week, and we had a similar kind of mix of activities on offer, but we had kind of circus skills and jewellery making, and we had a magician, we had a variety of things really. And then at each session there's an activity or activities for an hour and a half, and then everyone gets lunch, and so the whole thing's free of charge. We've been given some very generous funding by the Your Wirral Fund, and also local businesses have made contributions, and the local housing association. So we've been very lucky really to have been so well supported. But there have been all kinds of spin-off benefits. I mean, we had a mum today who came to me at the end of the session and said, you know, if these sessions hadn't been on over the summer, I would have really struggled. And, you know, I think it's provided support for parents, because it's not always easy to take children out of the house, and it's not always very easy to afford. And so these sessions have been free of charge, so that's been a real help. And we've actually attracted very local children, so children from the streets just around where we are really, and families that are on free school meals, so exactly the kind of people that the sessions were aimed at really. But I think everybody, the feedback generally from the community has been very, very positive indeed.
That was Adam Lawrence speaking to Lynn Cullins. After David Cameron promising that the British public will have the chance to vote on whether the UK should stay in the EU, we sent our first-year journalism students out on the streets of Liverpool to find out what you thought. They found that 67% of the 341 people asked voted yes, the UK should stick with the EU, which in fact is the same percentage found from the 1975 referendum 40 years ago. 23% said we should leave the EU, and 10% did not know. You can find out more details and exactly what people told our students by going to jmu-journalism.org.uk. Now it's time for sports with James Knowles.
Jurgen Klopp earned his first win as Liverpool boss after Nathaniel Clyne's maiden Reds goal saw off Bournemouth in the Capital One Cup fourth round. The Reds, who have won the League Cup on a record 8 occasions, move into the quarterfinals for the second successive season. Everton also progressed into the quarterfinals after beating Norwich on penalties at Goodison Park on Tuesday night. It is only the second time in the last 27 years that the Blues have reached the quarterfinals of this competition. Both teams faced tough away trips in the quarterfinals as Liverpool travelled to fellow Premier League side Southampton, whilst the Blues head up north to face Middlesbrough, who knocked out Manchester United. It wasn't all good news for the Merseyside teams as Tranmere failed to qualify for the first round of this year's FA Cup after losing 2-0 to fellow National League side Lincoln City. In boxing, Liverpool's Liam Smith is close to agreeing a fight with the former two-time Fighter of the Year Shane Mosley. Smith claimed the WBO World Light Middleweight title with a 7th-round knockout of John Thompson at Manchester's MEN Arena earlier this month, and will make his first title defence back in Manchester on December 18th. Liverpool Basketball Club enjoyed mixed fortunes at the weekend with a 50% success rate on court. Amongst the winners were the under-16s, who travelled down the East Lancs to take on Manchester Magic 2. The visitors dominated the game from the outset, and that showed on the scoreline as they beat the Manchester club 103-38. Finally, snooker. John Welsh is the new Argyle Taxis Wirral Open champion after he defeated last year's champion John Whitty 4-2 in a tense final at Potshots in Wallasey. The success ensures a magnificent 7 Merseyside titles for Welsh, which include 2 Mersey Master titles and 4 Merseyside Open triumphs. The amateur will be hoping for more success when the Merseyside Open kicks off next weekend.
That was James Knowles with the Sports Roundup. Thanks, James. And now for what's on in Liverpool. With Halloween this weekend and Bonfire next Thursday, there is a lot going on next week. Throughout October, the popular Farmer Ted's in Ormskirk has undergone a gruesome transformation and became Merseyside's biggest Halloween event, Farmageddon. The final one will be on the spookiest day of all, Halloween. For a view of this event, visit jmu-journalism.org.uk. This Halloween also marks Shiverpool's 10th birthday, and on the 31st you can explore the darker side of Liverpool on one of Shiverpool's walking or ghost bus tours. Prices vary depending on age. And for anyone wanting to celebrate Bonfire Night at one of Liverpool's public performances, both Sefton Park and Newsham Park are sure to put on a dazzling display on the 5th of November. However, remember, it is forbidden to bring your own fireworks, sparklers or Chinese lanterns. However, this week is not just about spooking or sparklers. The Elvis Costello Dear to Alive at the Liverpool Philharmonic Hall is in cinemas from the 30th of October. It is a concert documentary of the singing legend's 2015 performance at Liverpool Philharmonic Hall and will be released in cinemas around the UK. Liverpool Music Week comes to close on Saturday the 31st of October with a bang. The closing party will sport a number of different musicians and will take place at Campen Furnace. Tickets are £15. An evening with Andy Beckett takes place on 2nd of November at Waterstones in Liverpool One. The author, Guardian columnist and historian will be discussing his latest book, Promised You a Miracle, with Lindsay Hanley, a cultural fellow at LGMU. That's all for today. Join us next week for Liverpool Life's weekly podcast. I'm Kate Hewson. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Liverpool Life Podcast, brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.